Welcome to the AM Jackson Podcast with your host, Mark Daly. News, sports, and conversations that are important to Jackson County. This is the AM Jackson Podcast.
Local Jackson news now from the WKHM.com News Center.
Good morning. 5 minutes after the top of the hour, reporting with WKHM News, I'm Mark Daly. A federal lawsuit has been filed against Columbia Township and two police officers following the death of a man days after his arrest. The estate of Philip Dawson claims he was taken into custody for a misdemeanor driving offense in May of 2023, then held face down in handcuffs on concrete while his condition worsened. The suit alleges he lost consciousness at the scene and later died after being removed from life support. An autopsy determined the cause of death was brain damage due to lack of oxygen, with the stress of the arrest listed as a contributing factor. The lawsuit accuses the officers of excessive force, failure to intervene, and negligence, and also claims the township failed to properly train and supervise officers. The Jackson County prosecutor previously declined to file charges. The Lifeways Board of Directors have voted to withdraw a $15.5 million bond request they had made to Hillsdale County to provide funds for the construction of a new Lifeways office building in Hillsdale. The vote was held at the Mental Health Organization's board meeting on Wednesday, which was moved to their Jackson location, 1200 Northwest Avenue, to have a larger attendance capacity. The bond request has drawn a large response from Hillsdale County residents who have expressed their desire for the request to be put on a ballot rather than being decided on by the Hillsdale County Board of Commissioners. Citizens also voiced concerns about the taxpayers being on the hook for the bond if Lifeways were to default on the $15.5 million worth of borrowed money. The Hillsdale County Commissioners had voted in favor of a resolution to place the bond on a ballot in a split vote, but then later voted against it in another split vote. Hillsdale County Board Chair and Lifeways Board Chair Mark Wiley, who had consistently voted against putting the issue on the ballot, recently said it was time to pull the plug on the bond request at the Lifeways Program and Finance Committee meeting on April 7th. The Program and Finance Committee officially recommended the full board withdraw the request. Board member Bruce Caswell voiced his frustration with the situation during the meeting, stating that Hillsdale citizens deserve the same access to mental health treatment as everyone else.
We've been at this, what, 2 years? More than that. And who's suffered for the 2 years? The people that need our services. They're the only ones that have suffered. I don't want any of the thing to get built. I don't want to wait any longer. The people in the county where I live deserve the same kind of mental health and substance abuse services that people get in urban and suburban areas all over this state.
Board member Earl Pulaski voted against the withdrawal, saying that one potential source of funding for the building should not be abandoned before another one is found.
As I mentioned in committee, I think that it's unwise for us to abandon one source of potential funding for the Hillsdale building before arriving at some other reasonable financing opportunity, financing option. So, Mr. Chair, I'll be a no on this vote, and I would ask for a roll call vote, please.
Pulaski also joined board members Christine Carlson and Ray Snell in the minority, with the motion passing 6-3.
Roll call, please.
Doug Brinker?
Yes.
Melissa Callison?
I'm sorry, was that me?
Yes.
Yes.
Christine Carlson?
No.
Bruce Caswell?
Eugene Dean?
Yes.
Yes.
Kevin Collins?
Yes.
Earl Pulaski?
No.
Ray Snell?
No.
Ed Woods?
Yes.
And Mark Wiley?
Yes.
6-3. Yes,
motion
carries.
Yeah. Motion carries 6-3.
Dozens of new counties are under a state of emergency. Governor Gretchen Whitmer has added 32 additional counties across Michigan following this week's severe weather. The declaration will help local governments cover emergency response costs due to rising water levels, flooding, straight-line winds, and tornadoes. Michigan State Police and Homeland Security are currently coordinating the state's emergency response and assisting local efforts. In northern Michigan, northeast of Traverse City, officials are telling Bel Air residents and businesses on the intermediate river downstream of the Bel Air Dam to prepare to evacuate. Beth Levisor lives in Bel Air and says many are getting ready to evacuate.
Many of them already have water coming into their crawl spaces.
So they're moving things. Many of them are putting up sandbags, and they're preparing, you know, putting to-go bags in their car and getting documents together and such so that they can move quickly if directed by officials.
Bel Air is one of several northern Michigan towns facing the possibility of a dam failing because of high water from snowmelt and heavy rain. She says she is not in a flood area. We continue to watch multiple overworked dams across the state.
That includes Sheboygan and Bel Air, as emergency management are doing everything they can to prevent a breach. Bridge Michigan releasing a new study showing two-thirds of the state's 2,600 dams have exceeded their lifespan of 50 years and are in need of repair. A report from the Association of State Dam Safety Officials showing 100 dams across the country are currently in poor condition. State dams need at least $1 billion in updates. And they note in Bel Air, the 120-year-old structure was not built to withstand these modern floods. Ryan Recker for the Michigan News Network.
Consumers Energy says its hydroelectric dams are operating safely despite heavy rains and flooding across Michigan this week. The company reports all 13 dams are structurally sound and handling increased water flow as rivers surge from rain and melting snow. Those dams sit along five rivers and continue generating electricity for customers statewide. Officials say some recreation areas downstream may be temporarily closed as a safety precaution with updates provided locally. Flood warnings issued by the National Weather Service are not caused by dam operations. Most of the facilities are run off river, meaning water flows in and released downstream. Consumers Energy says rising water from upstream is the primary driver of current flooding concerns. National Weather Service teams are hard at work across Michigan trying to confirm if tornadoes touched down. Rich Pullman is with their White Lake office surveying damage near Saginaw. He said his team looks for specific patterns.
One of the biggest indications is just the damage pattern itself. With the tornado, it's going to be a relatively narrow line. If you think about a ratio, it might be 3 or 4 miles long, but 100 to 500 yards wide.
Pullman said a tornado has a herringbone pattern, while wind damage expands outward like a fan. He said severe weather chances increase in early spring and peak in June. At the University of Michigan, many students are asking if a tornado came through the area.
Heavy damage at the University of Michigan following last night's storms. The roof partially ripped off Yost Ice Arena. Several trees down on homes, down over roads, power lines down as well. Really debris everywhere. Joe was walking on campus early this morning. He goes to the University of Michigan. He says the roof was ripped off his apartment building and his apartment was flooded. Joe, how can you describe this?
Dude, it's like the apocalypse.
The good news, Ann Arbor police say there were no injuries after the storms rolled through last night. In Ann Arbor, Luke Sloan
for the Michigan News Network.
The American One Event Center will be the spot for a community gathering for those in recovery from drug addiction in the form of the PATH Summit from the prosecutor's office from 5 to 7 next Wednesday, April 22nd. Jackson County Prosecutor Kelsey Guernsey says that the summit is seeing a bit of a shakeup this year, with the theme of the event being a celebration of those who make the daily choice of sobriety.
We are really excited this year for our kind of new summit. And the new summit is going to be, this year at least, a celebration. And it is a celebration of those that are choosing sobriety and those that have been those frontline workers for years and years and years. We've been, done all this education, all this talk about prevention and treatment. And this year, though, we're really wanting to celebrate everybody who's really worked hard at it. You know, a lot of those that are in recovery in an attempt to reduce the stigma, it's this recovery out loud kind of thought process. We really wanted to embrace that this year and really celebrate all of those in recovery.
Prosecutor Guernsey explained why the summit has pivoted from an educational event to one that's meant to feel more like a celebration.
I think we recognize that we've done a lot of educating, and it's never ending, right? There's always more educating to do, but we really wanted to take a moment this year. We'll probably go back to some educating next year and doing some more conversations and whatnot. Sometimes those summits can be a bit luxury, and this year we wanted it to be, you know what, we're going to make this be a celebration. Okay. We might go back to educating. We might go back to bringing kind of the community together, because I think there are great messages in that, and I do think we've made a lot of progress with these drug summits over the years. This year, we just chose to pivot a little bit and to celebrate because we've got some great people that are making a big difference.
Some will also focus on the people and organizations in the Jackson community that put in the work to assist and provide resources for those in recovery.
We've had really great kind of members of any programming in our county have been at the table. So Family Service and Children's Aid, Catholic Charities, Home of New Vision, Health Department, Henry Ford, Sheriff's Department, Blackman Township, you name it, Andy's Angels and Andy's Place, you name it. And we've had them at the table. And it's been a really good collaborative group in talking about what do we do. And that's what we've come to is we have a lot of frontline people that are working really, really hard. And we really want to embrace and celebrate them as they're getting it done.
The Free Path Summit will feature multiple awards, refreshments, and powerful testimonials celebrating recovery. A ribbon cutting is taking place for the Advanced Maintenance Training Center in Jackson this afternoon. Luke Moorhead with WKHM has more.
A ribbon-cutting ceremony will be taking place for the Advanced Manufacturing Training Center located at 3517 Shield Drive with the ShopRat Foundation and the Jackson Area Manufacturers Association on Thursday. Officials with the Jackson County Chamber of Commerce say they're excited to celebrate alongside a great business in the community, with the event happening from 2 to 4 p.m. with the ribbon scheduled to be cut at around 2:30. Back in February, State Representative Kathy Schmaltz, alongside ShopRat Foundation Executive Director Kelly Burr Coughlin, testified to advocate for a $200,000 investment through the next state budget to equip the Advanced Manufacturing Training Center with state-of-the-art computer numerical control machinery. State funding for the purchase would enable the center to house 16 pieces of equipment exclusively for educational purposes, with the training being described as essential to meet industry needs in automotive, biomedical, aerospace, and other sectors facing a shortage of skilled workers. Schmaltz said that funding would ensure that students have access to the tools and experience needed to succeed in high-demand technical fields and would help create successful career paths for students. Reporting with WKHM, I'm Luke Moorhead.
A shocking diagnosis will force the University of Michigan to change their leadership plan again. Michigan News Network's Chris Fillar.
President-elect Kent Siverud says he has brain cancer. He saw doctors after feeling sick last week while in Syracuse, where he held his previous role. In a video statement this morning, Mark Bernstein, the Board of Regents chairman, broke the news.
Domenico Grasso will continue to serve as president until the next president begins their service. And the board plans to re-engage a search process as soon as possible. We'll share details about this in the coming days.
Siverud will now be treated by Michigan Medicine. He'll serve a role at the U of M Law School and be a special advisor to the board. Chris Fillar, Michigan News Network.
The American Brain Tumor Association says an estimated 30,000 people are diagnosed with a primary brain cancer each year. Dr. Michael Dominello, radiation oncologist and team leader for the Brain Tumor Multidisciplinary Committee at Karmanos Cancer Institute, said it's one of the most difficult types of cancer.
I think what makes brain tumors so difficult to treat is where these tumors are occurring. When there is a tumor infiltrating the brain is critical real estate. The brain is responsible for our executive function, our personality, our ability to care for ourselves, to make rational decisions.
University of Michigan President-elect Kent Siverud has not specified the type of brain cancer that he has. Ford is planning a major overhaul of its product lineup.
Ford taking the wraps off what it calls its new product creation and industrialization organization. It aims to launch what Ford says is one of the most intensive product, software, and service rollouts in the company's history. Ford expects to refresh 80% of its North American lineup by 2029, adding a lot of new technology. The team will be led by Chief Operating Officer Kumar Galhotra. Ford also announcing that Doug Field, wooed away from Apple to lead their technology efforts, will be leaving the company next month. Jeff Gilbert for the Michigan News Network.
Next time you're working in the yard, keep an eye out for invasive pests.
When left unchecked, they can devastate native plants and wildlife and also compete for other resources and permanently alter habitats. Lindsay Patrick with the Michigan Department of Agriculture and Rural Development has eyes in the field. That's you. And soon it's going to be prime season for those pests.
Most of them are just getting started, just warming up. You know, it's warming up. Eggs will begin hatching soon. insect eggs. Plants are beginning to grow, so plant diseases are not really rolling yet. So now's a good time for learning about them, because they're going to ramp up as the weather gets warmer.
And Patrick says protecting your landscapes also protects the state's natural resources. Ryan Recker for the Michigan News Network.
It's springtime, and that means it's baby animal season. The Howell Nature Center says they're seeing a major influx of animals coming in. Squirrels, cottontails, raptors making up the majority of intakes right now. Wildlife clinic manager Kiki Bolduck has one piece of advice if you find an animal in need.
It's so hard, but if you do find an animal in need, especially a baby, and you're not sure if it needs help or not, don't feed it. 100%. It's so hard, but feeding them can sometimes make things 10 times worse. So having them with a heat source is always a good thing.
Ms. Center is hosting their annual baby shower May 23rd. They also have a baby shower wish list available online for those who want to make a monetary donation. It's Thursday, the 16th day of April, and today we celebrate Day of the Mushroom. It's Foursquare Day. People still play Foursquare? I don't know. I was at Western yesterday, and I was floored. I saw kids playing hacky sack. I haven't seen that since 1988. National Bean Counters Day, National Eggs Benedict Day, National Librarian Day, National Orchid Day, Save the Elephant Day, and it's World Semicolon Day. It was on this date in 1862. A bill ending slavery in the District of Columbia became law. It's on this date in 1943. The hallucinogenic effects of the synthetic drug LSD-25 were discovered by Swiss chemist Albert Hofmann. It's on this date in 1945, U.S. troops reached Nuremberg, Germany. On this date in 1962, Walter Cronkite succeeded Douglas Edwards as anchorman of CBS Evening News. It's on this date in 1972, Apollo 16 blasted off on a voyage to the moon. It's on this date in 1974, Queen held their first U.S. concert at Regis College in Denver, Colorado. On this date in 1991, David Lean, director of Dr. Zhivago and Lawrence of Arabia, he passed away at the age of 83. It's on this date in 1999, Wayne Gretzky announced his retirement from the National Hockey League. It's on this date in 2007, Virginia Tech student Sung Hyo Cho killed two students in a dorm and 30 students 2 hours later in a classroom building. It's on this date in 2011, Nicolas Cage was arrested on several charges, including domestic abuse battery, after an apparent drunken argument with his wife in New Orleans, Louisiana. It's on this date in 2015, The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills star Kim Richards was arrested on suspicion of being drunk in public. She was booked for public intoxication, trespassing, resisting, and battery on an officer. It's on this date in 2018. Kendrick Lamar was the first rapper and non-classical or jazz musician to win the Pulitzer Prize for music with his album, Damn. And it's on this date in 2021. Raul Castro confirmed he would be resigning as Cuban Communist Party leader, ending his family's six-decade leadership of Cuba. Birthdays today include Sadie Sink, 24, actress from Stranger Things, also in The Whale. Anya Taylor-Joy, 30, actress, The Queen's Gambit. The Menu, Emma, Dune, Part 3. Claire Foy is 42, actress from The Crown, Women Talking, All of Us Strangers. Peter Billingsley is 55, actor from A Christmas... The little kid, Ralphie, from A Christmas Story, is 55 today. John Cryer from 2 and a Half Men, Pretty in Pink, he's 61. Martin Lawrence, Bad Boys, Martin, 61 today. Ellen Barkin is 72, actress. Switch, Sea of Love, Ocean's 13. Billy West is 74, voice actor. Ren and Stimpy, who's also did some voices for Futurama. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is 79 today. Basketball Hall of Famer, basketball legend. Pope Benedict XVI would have had a birthday today. He passed away in 2022. Charlie Chaplin would have had a birthday today. He passed away in 1977. And Wilbur Wright, bicycle maker, aviator, conducted first powered airplane flight with his brother Orville Wilbur Wright would have had a birthday today. He passed away in 1912. Other birthdays today include Chance the Rapper. He's 33 today. Akon is 53 today. Dave Perner from Soul Asylum is 62 today. Jimmy Osmond, he's the youngest Osmond brother. The youngest Osmond brother is 63 today. Jason Scheff, bassist of Chicago, 64 today. Peter Garrett, singer, politician, 73 today. Bobby Vinton has a birthday today. The Blue Velvet singer is 91. Henry Mancini, he did the Pink Panther theme. He would have had a birthday today. He passed away in 1994. Herbie Mann, jazz flute player, passed away in 2003, would have had a birthday today. Selena, the queen of Tejano music, she would have had a birthday today. She lost her life in 1995. And Dusty Springfield would have had a birthday today. She passed away in 1999.
I don't know what it is that makes me love you so.
For more local stories, breaking news, and interviews with Jackson's newsmakers, visit us online at WKHM.com. I'm Mark Daly.
I'm Mark Daly, and you're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast.
And let's start. We're going to start off with the Detroit Baseball Tigers. It was a good day to be a Tigers fan yesterday. And if you, before we start every show here on AM Jackson, we do a quick little reel to preview what you can expect. And in that video on the AM Jackson Facebook page, and we'll put it on the News Talk 970 AM 101.5 page here in just a little bit. In that video, I explain to you, I give you the sole reason for the Tigers on their stretch, on their winning stretch right now. I'm telling you, that's where you need to go, the AM Jackson Facebook page, or at News Talk 970 AM 101.5 FM on Facebook, and you'll see. It's not on the News Talk 971 just yet. Give me a few minutes, but it will be there. But I give you scientific proof as to why the Tigers are on a winning streak right now. Tigers beat the Royals 2-1 again last night. Their second 2-1 win in a row over the division foe. They took a 1-0 lead in the third inning. We're going to get to that in a second. Right now, let's get to the highlights. We're going to start in the second. Flaherty on fire. You never know what you're going to get. He is that box of chocolates on the mound for the Tigers. And he strikes out, retired six batters in a row.
The 3-2. Swing and a miss. Got him with a fastball, and that's how you attack him. Fastball right by him, and Jack Flaherty strikes out the side. Six up, six down.
Six up, six down. We're going to stay in the third as Torres gone and gets an out at home.
Ground ball to second base, fielded by Gleyber Torres. He'll throw home, and Caglione easy out at home plate. Little collision, but Jake Rogers got the ball. You're allowed to drop a knee. He did block the plate. Caglione had no place to go. Terrific job by Flaherty to make big pitches, and it's a man on first with two outs.
Now, we didn't get the highlight on this because I'm assuming it was a long highlight because they had to take time to look at it. So in the third, this is when the Tigers took a 1-0 lead on a sack fly from Jake Rogers that scored Javi Baez, as Baez yet again made an impressive move to avoid the tag and score the run. If you didn't see it, the tag was there. It was right there. Javi Baez, as he's sliding into home, picks up his hand over the tag, puts it back down again, right on the plate, avoids the tag, gets the run for the Tigers. They go up 1-0 in the third. And then A little bit later on in the fifth, Kansas City ties it up on an RBI single.
Line drive, base hit into right field. No, sinking in front of Kerry Carpenter. Have to play it, knock it down. One run is in, and Caglione will stop at third. Massey scores, line drive single to right for Kyle Isbell. We've got a 1-1 game.
And that's it. That's the offense for the Kansas City Royals. As in the eighth, the Tigers get a dinger.
The 1-1, swinging a high fly ball right field. This one's deep. This one's back. This one, gone! Wenzel Perez, first hit of the year, is a home run. Tigers take a 2-1 lead in the eighth.
And that's where we would end. Tigers win 2-1. That's, again, their second 2-1 win in a row over the Kansas City Baseball Royals. Tigers have now won five straight all at home, and the series ends today. Finale is at 1:10, 12:45 for the broadcast on Fox Sports 101.9 FM. Also announced yesterday, McGonagall getting himself a deal.
Kevin McGonagall is off to a blazing hot start in his MLB career, and he's getting paid for it. The Tigers agreed to a contract extension with the rookie shortstop for 8 years and $150 million. McGonagall also currently ranks 29th in baseball in walk percentage at 21%. Out of the top 30, he's one of only eight players with a higher walk rate than strikeout rate. I'm Brendan Shabbat for the Michigan News Network.
Elsewhere from Major League Baseball yesterday, Dodgers topped the Mets 8-2. It was the A's over the Rangers 6-5. Padres beat the Mariners 7-6. Brewers over the Blue Jays 2-1. Astros topped the Rockies 3-1. Rays beating the White Sox 8-3. Braves on top of the Marlins 6-3. Stankies beat the Angels 5-4. Cubbies over the Phillies 11-2. Padres shut out the Natties 2-0. The Pirates shut out the Natties 2-0. Reds on top of the Giants 8-3. Red Sox over the Twins 9-5. Cards beat the Guardians 5-3. And the Diamondbacks over the BOs 8-5. So that puts our way too early in the season standings. Twins at 11-8. Guardians at 10-9. Tigers back to 500 at 9-9. Then the Royals at 7-11 and the White Sox at 6-2. So the Tigers right there at middle ground. But it's razor thin. Again, so early in the season, but razor thin. Jackson College Jets baseball. They're in a doubleheader today as the Jets will be at St. Clair County Community College. Game one is at 2. Game two is at 4:30. Jackson College Jets baseball, 17-13 on the season, 9-4. Jets softball, they're back in action tomorrow. So probably more on that with Captain Steve Boyle tomorrow as he's sitting in for us. We're going to be taking the day off on Friday. High school baseball, University Liggett topped Grass Lake 11-5. They served up Grass Lake's first loss on the season, so the Warriors right now are 7-1. Oh, you know what? Before we go any farther, thank you, Chief. Thank you, Chief. Ypsilanti, Lincoln 18, Jackson 3 in J-High lacrosse from yesterday. So J-High has yet to find a win in lacrosse yet on the season. Still a very, very, very young program. Baseball today for high school. You've got Addison hosting Springport. Olivet will be hosting Napoleon. Litchfield will host Vandy. Hanover Horton's going to be hosting Quincy, that is. And Western will host Charlotte. 4 o'clock first pitch times all across the board. Softball today, Olivet will host Napoleon. Litchfield will host Vandy. Notre Dame hosting the Lumen Christi Softball Titans. And Western will host Charlotte in baseball today. Let's take a look at high school soccer. Let's go to the Big 8 first, where yesterday it was Stockbridge topping Vermontville Maple Valley 9-1 over the Valley. Today, Bronson's at Olivet. That's at 6 o'clock. Girls soccer out of the Cascades Conference, where yesterday it was Columbia shutting out Jonesville 7-0 for the victory. Senior forward Kennedy Salter led all scores with 4 goals. Junior forward Mara Henry, tallied two, and sophomore forward Lily Lake scored her first varsity goal to round it all out. Assists went to Henry with three goals, and Georgia Beard, Ashlyn Noble, and Allie Pound all with one each, and one goal by Salter was unassisted. Sophomore Sophia Lofstrom filled in for goalkeeper again and secured her second varsity shutout, but did not have to make any saves as Columbia defense smothered the Jonesville Tech throughout the contest. Columbia now 4-2 on the season, 3-1 in Cascades play. You know, if I don't pick it up now, it's going to sit there. It's going to get rolled over by the chair. Hey, gravity took over. I had to pick it up. Grass Lake and Manchester kicked it around for a first half, a second half, an extra time, and parents walked away very disappointed with a 3-3 tie. Hanover at center, that was postponed yesterday in girls soccer. Interstate 8 soccer from yesterday. Western at Dexter, that one was postponed. Battle Creek, Harper Creek at Allegan, 6:30 today. Marshall at Coldwater at 6:30 today in the I-8. In the white, SEC white yesterday, Chelsea shut out Jackson 4-0. It was Pinckney shutting out Lincoln 8-0, and Adrian over Tecumseh 4-0. Today in Lumen Christi soccer, they are home as they host Clarkston Everest College. That's going to be a 6 o'clock kick time on the pitch at Lumen. Boys golf today has Hillsdale Academy Invitational. That's at 10 o'clock. Okay. Jackson and Adrian, that is at 3 o'clock. Girls tennis today, Lumen Christi at Allegan at 9. Tecumseh is going to be at Columbia at 4. Jackson at Adrian at 4. Pinckney will be at Northwest, 4 o'clock for girls tennis. That's a quick look at high school sports. On to NBA basketball play-in tournament. Yesterday, it was the 76ers topping the Magic 109-97. Warriors beat the Clippers 126-121, so Clippers have been eliminated. So that means coming up tomorrow, you've got the Magic versus the Hornets at 7:30. Winners will advance to the number 8 seed, and they'll face the Pistons on Sunday. And the other play-in game, Suns versus Warriors, 10 o'clock. Both those contests are tomorrow. Nothing on the docket today in the NBA. Detroit Hockey Red Wings, they wrapped up their season with a loss. Real quick, let's get to Ken Cal with the wrap.
Hi, this is Ken Cal. Luke Cunnan and Mike Benning scored a pair of goals, leading the Florida Panthers to an 8-1 win over the Red Wings in the season finale last night in Sunrise, Florida. Panthers blew the game open in the second period as Luke Cunnan, A.J. Greer, and Mike Benning scored in a 4-minute, 2-second span. Benning scored again at 12:41, giving the Panthers a commanding 5-0 lead. Justin Falk finally got the Red Wings on the board, netting his 16th of the season at 16:12 of the second. In the third, Cole Schwint, Cole Reinhart, and Cunnan again scored in the third as the Panthers recorded their 40th win of the season. Again, the final score, Florida 8 and the Red Wings 1.
And that's it, as a bow's put on the Red Wings season this year. And that wraps up our sports, courtesy of Kettlebell Hotspots.
You're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast with your host, Mark Daly.
Back to AM Jackson, live from the County National Bank Studio.
News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM, and we'll get to ABC News headlines, courtesy of the Jenkins Insurance Group, Farm Bureau Insurance Agency, here in just a few moments. But right now, it's a pleasure to welcome back into the studio Sam Hunt, this time with Ella Sharp, and for the first time ever, we have Corinna Hirschberger joining us in the studio. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Mark. How are you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
Good. Thanks for having us on. It's been really cool to kind of sit down and talk with you, you know, this morning. So we're excited to promote everything that's going on with Ella.
I know. Well, it's good to send. Last time you and I had a conversation, we were talking about running. You were with the Y. And so you've been with Ella now. I saw the post on Facebook, and I tried to do the deep dive into it. I was doing some Facebook stalking, and I think it was before all the detail was up there. So it feels like it's been a relatively new move.
Yeah. It was a subtle profile picture. I was like, I don't really need to announce anything cool, but it'd be fun to put something out there. So, I put a little Facebook post out, out, and it's been about 3 weeks now with Ella, really getting comfortable with everybody, with Corinna, and learning pretty much how everything at Ella works. It's been a really, really awesome experience so far. So we've been planning a lot of things over the last 3 weeks with everybody that we got some cool things coming up.
Okay, now we're going to get into all that. What's your role with Ella now?
I'm the I can't speak right now.
I know, it's a very intimidating thing here.
Director of Development is my position over at Ella.
Director of Development, okay.
Helping out and talking with people, making relationships and partnerships. We're wanting to be an open door for people to come in and enjoy Ella and share that resource with everybody. So that's where our department with Corinna and I come in. So we're really promoting getting the partners in and making sure that we share Ella with everybody.
Okay. Corinna, welcome. Thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you. Very excited.
Now, what's your role with Ella?
I'm the communications coordinator, I'm doing the socials, the marketing, the grants, and then helping out with Sam for everything that he needs.
Well, social, the marketing, and the grants. That seems
it's a lot.
That's a lot. That's pretty important stuff, too.
Yeah,
I love
it.
So, with you doing the grants and with Sam doing the fund development, obviously these two departments are very intertwined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. We kind of make up the development department at Ella Sharp, which is kind of a new thing this year, so we're really excited to see where we can go with it.
So how long have you been with Ella?
I think about like 3.5 months, four months. Yeah, I started in January.
So you got all significantly more seniority than Sam.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta hang that over my head the rest of the time we're working together. That's okay.
Yeah. Now, are you from Jackson?
Yes, I grew up in Jackson. So,
okay. Yep. Where'd you go to, can I ask, where you went to school?
Yes, I went to Jackson Christian.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, home of the Royals.
Yep.
All right, good. All right. So what brought you to Ella Sharp?
Yeah, so, I mean, I grew up in Jackson. I still live in Jackson. Mm-hmm. I really love it. I grew up going to Ella Sharp. I participated in the Art Alone program. Sure. So it's always had a special place in my heart. And when I saw the job posting, I was like, this is everything that I love to do. And I'd love to work at the museum. So
okay.
Here I am.
What's your favorite, before we get into the details, what's your favorite part about Ella Sharp? What's the thing about Ella Sharp that stands out for you the most?
Yeah, so I feel like it's just the whole atmosphere, like the team that's been cultivated and the atmosphere of working in a museum is just really special.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sam, I'm going to guess it's the Art, Beer, and Wine Festival. You're wearing
lots
a shirt.
Of events. That's what drove me in at first. You know, with our interim executive director, Tina Mercier, she really helped me out with kind of getting used to everything that's going on at the museum. But I ended up helping her out 2 years ago volunteering at the Art, Beer, and Wine Festival. That was my first real introduction into Ella and what, our museum, offers. So that was the first thing that really drove me into there. But I've been around here for quite a long time now, where I've got to see different nonprofits, how they operate and what things they have to offer. And there's something special with this museum and how Ella can offer things to other people and teach. So I came from an education background. My parents were educators. I went a nonprofit route rather than a teaching route, but this is still down that education road. So that was something that was really spoke to me as I came in.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Art, Beer, and Wine Festival. That's it's coming up. It's one of those signature events that we look forward to each and every year. And we'll tell our listeners about it. Is it too early to get signed up?
It's never too early.
All right.
Yeah, I feel like our slogan has been like summer starts here. So summer starts at Art, Beer, and Wine. Mm. It's June 6th from 2 to 6. So we're going to have art, beer, and wine.
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Live music and really good food. Lots of food trucks and vendors. New this year, we have kid zones, which should kind of give a family-friendly feel. We're going to have mocktails, too.
Okay.
And then you can buy tickets now on our website at ellasharpmuseum.org.
Okay. So get them early. Is there a threat of it selling out?
Our ticket sales are up this year.
Good.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
They're selling very fast.
Yeah.
So I don't think that we've ever had a thing of selling out in a way, but it's definitely something of pick them up fast in case they do.
We
do have certain capacities on certain things. If it does come to that point, then we may say it's sold out. So we've been encouraging people. We have our packages online to go take a look at for Art, Beer, and Wine Festival and the tickets to go pick them up at any time. They're available now.
Right. Mm-hmm. What I love about the setting at Ellis Sharp is there's art, beer, and wine festivals that happen in a variety of different places, different locations, different communities. But you don't have a location like Ella where you get to walk around on the grounds. You get to see the art that's out there on display. You just don't have the same type of feeling anywhere else than what you're going to have with the Art, Beer, and Wine Festival here in Jackson on the grounds at Ella. It's unique and it's fun.
Yeah, I think the word that really is perfect there, that is unique, right? There's just a whole appreciation that the whole community can come in during that event and enjoy something. Everybody loves some sort of drink, and including the mocktails and the kids zone this year is really to bring able a family event. This event is something that we want to have for all, for everybody to bring in, and somebody has a purpose there. So to be able to enjoy what culture that we bring, along with the different fun things that we do from an entertainment side of things as a community really is a unique opportunity to have here.
And it's an engaging part of the community, and as you know, it's all about building relationships, and that's one of the things that this event does. It brings the community to Ellis Sharp, and it introduces a lot of people to Ellis Sharp Park too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
so it's fun. Again, how do people, Corinna, get how do they get tickets? I don't know why. I'm a highly trained professional. I don't know why that's tripping me up this morning. So okay. Best way to get tickets, again, tell our listeners.
Yeah, so they're on our website, ellissharpmuseum.org. You can go to our upcoming events page, Art, Beer, and Wine, and then you can click the button and go buy the tickets now.
Okay. So one of the things, let's pivot a little bit. One of the things coming up with Ellis Sharp is you're taking part in the Jackson Gives Back event with the Community Foundation. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Jackson Community Foundation, as most of us know in the community, is a really wonderful resource to help out with nonprofits and scholarships for supporting our kids and our youth, as well as organizations such as ours. They are starting out for the first year a thing called a Community Gives Day. It's called Jackson Gives. We are participating in it. It's a one-day, 24-hour marathon featuring 25 nonprofits that are going to be basically fundraising all day for a competition between us to see who can raise the most amount of funds and get to our goals. So we're participating in that. That is something that we're extremely excited to be a part of. And we are really going to start launching our campaign in the Jackson Gives event here in the next few days.
Okay.
So we're going to be reaching out both through our social media and through our member databases through Ellis Sharp and kind of promoting this and getting excited for enjoying art. One of the things that we were told just a couple of days ago that I think really resonates with all of us in the organization is art is an essential part of our lives, whether it's a physical art piece or some sort of media art. This is art right here as we're speaking, right? These are all things that are essential to our daily lives, and that's our promotion. We really want to focus on art being essential, and then the youth, going back to the youth and the children. So when you go and look at our page, once Jackson Gives in the community Foundation start opening and launching our Community Gives Day page, you're going to see a lot about our youth and how we can offer and help out our youth through raising in that day. So we're extremely excited about it. We spent a lot of time on it so far. We still got 27 days before that day happens. So those next 27 days are going to be, nose on the ground, boots on the ground, enjoying, trying to get people excited for our cause.
What was that date again?
It is May 13th.
Okay.
May 13th from 12:01 a.m.
Right.
In the morning to 11:59 at night and during that day. So it should be really fun.
Sounds like that's going to, and it feels like friendly competition with other nonprofits. Have we had discussions about what it's what Ella's going to do to kind of rise above the other noise out there that day?
Super fun campaign. This is where Corinna, I think, really gets to shine here with her social media and marketing background and experience. She is going to be having some really cool ideas.
Yeah, so we've got the marketing campaign. It's going to start soon. We might do some fun, challenges during the day, maybe some Facebook Live so you can tune in and kind of like watch our progress. So it should just be really exciting. We're trying to build up the anticipation around it. Kind of like make this a big community support day. So it's going to be really cool.
All right. Well, we're looking forward to that. Now, another thing that's coming up is the Free Museum Day. And Ella, again, taking part in that. Mm-hmm. Sugaring and shearing used to be, is that a thing this year? Is that going to be a part of that, or what's happening with sugar?
Because that's Free Museum Day, yeah. Pretty much is our sugar shearing event.
Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
That's correct. May 9th, Saturday, May 9th.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, tell us about the Free Museum Day.
So this is, I believe, the second or third year doing Free Museum Day throughout Jackson County. It's really something that we're leaning into, inviting families to come enjoy the day out at Ella. We'll have food trucks. We'll have different events. One of the things that we had just talked about was a quiet room for people with sensory needs. So we'll have some really cool areas like that. The Jackson District Library will be down there. The JCISD will be there. We'll have some books to give out to kids. It really is an opportunity for us to open our doors to everybody in the community to come check out all the cool little things we have within our exhibits and our galleries and our outdoor areas, our schoolhouse, and all of our sculptures outside too. So really is an awesome opportunity for us to show off what we have.
Okay, so Free Museum Day, and you're taking part in that along with so many other museums, really, across Jackson County. There's a lot. Once you look at that list, it's kind of impressive to see where the arts community is in this community, in Jackson. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely. It's a great day to learn. I think that we learn in the classroom, especially as youth. We learn as we go out and experience as adults and work.
Yeah.
And now we get to learn about our history and our culture on days like this. So this is a great opportunity for our community.
Right. Corinna Hirschberger, Sam Hunt in the studio with us today from Ella Sharp Museum of Art and History. What can our listeners do if they want to support the cause, if they want to volunteer, or if they just want to learn more about Ella Sharp? What's the best avenue for them to take?
So definitely our website, visiting our website, getting all up in there. You can visit our upcoming events page. You can go to our contact page. We have forms to fill out for interest in the newsletter. Definitely check out our socials. We have a TikTok. We've been making really fun TikToks. Just visiting our website and visiting our social media.
Okay. Is the community room being used quite a bit throughout the summer too?
It is, yeah. Mm. So we have a lot of spaces that are being used throughout the summer. So if you want any rental spaces, you should, jump on that really quickly.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. What is that stained glass structure that's right there by the intersection? What the heck is that thing?
The art exhibit that we
have. Is that what that is?
It is an art exhibit. Okay. It's an art installation that we put in
December.
Looked
like a little stained glass nook.
I'm forgetting the name off the top of my head now.
I threw you the one curveball you're going to get today.
That's the one curveball. Now, I think the second day that I came in a couple of weeks ago, I was eating lunch. It was a beautiful day. And I was like, I'm just going to go in and check it out. And if you ever have the opportunity to go check out the stained glass installation that we do have outside of the historic farmhouse that we have.
Right there.
It's right by the road. Everybody
you can't
can
miss
see it.
It.
It is really a really cool and wonderful thing to just stand in and admire as you go in there. So I was really taken back by it the other day than when I was observing it. So we highly encourage people to come check it out. It is new. It is fresh. It's a very cool thing to kind of just enjoy something different.
It's not great for Distracted Driving Awareness Month because I crane my neck every time I drive by that thing.
You might see one of us waving hi to it.
What didn't we talk about today that our listeners need to know about Ella Sharp Museum of Art and History?
We have a lot of awesome things coming up, and we have a lot of excitement within the building that we want to share with people. And I think it goes back to the thought that we're having with community and having partners. We really want people to feel welcomed in the museum and want to feel a part of it, right? So we're looking for any sort of organizations or partners that want to be a part of the museum and share the museum with us to come in and really trying to collaborate. So if there's anybody out there that's like, I think this would be such a cool idea, feel free to come visit us. We'd love to show things off to you. And we would love to be a partner with a lot of our Jackson community.
Feels like there's like a renewed energy, like a new vibe at Ella right now. It feels like things just a little bit different, but different in a good way.
Yeah, it's a really special time, and I'm excited to see what we have in the months and years to come with our group.
All right, one more time, let's wrap up kind of where we started with the Art, Beer, and Wine Festival. How do people get their tickets? Give us the dates. Give us everything we need to know about Art, Beer, and Wine Festival.
Yeah, so June 6th, 2 to 6. you can buy tickets on our website, ellasharpmuseum.org. Go to our upcoming event page and find Art, Beer, and Wine, and then there's a button there that says Get Tickets, and then you can get tickets there.
How much are the tickets?
So I think they're about $50 or $55.
Okay. All right. And you get some tokens or what? Do you hand out tickets for the beverages? Yeah. How's that work?
So you get 10 drink tokens per ticket. There are actually, I think there's combos, so you can get a little bit of a deal based on the type of ticket that you get too. Okay. So,
I know. Yeah. I still have my glasses. Got a collection of glasses from previous ones. Yep. So they're always fun, and we're looking forward to it. All right. Corinna, Sam, thanks for coming in today. We had a lot of fun.
Pleasure, Mark. Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're listening to AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM. Now,
I'm Mark Daly, and you're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast.
It's a pleasure to have back in the studio with us today. We have Jacob Innocencio. Jacob, good seeing you.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
How you doing?
Doing fantastic. Good, good to see you, Mark.
And we also have Dodie Wheeler joining us here today. Dodie, good morning and welcome.
Thank you for having us.
So everybody's got, I feel left out. I don't have my Grow Jackson gear on. Go ahead and get me some. So, but we're talking about, it's been a conversation that's been going on for a while, but some very exciting things going to be happening at the Armory. Let's talk about that, Jacob.
Yeah, we're really excited to announce the River and Rail Food Hub, and we're really looking forward to bringing this vibrant community space that expands fresh food access and promotes and stabilizes and improves the local food economy. Mm-hmm. And so for years, we've had a really wonderful Grand River Farmers Market, and we're excited. We've been able to assume leadership of that in a great partnership with our friends at the DDA. And that is just the first step for a lot of exciting plans ahead, Mark.
Well, all right, let's start there. We're going to get into the nuts and bolts of all this here in just a second. But let's start there, because the DDA ran the farmers market for such a long time downtown, right there on the banks of the Grand River. How did that conversation start? And how did you guys come to that agreement, a mutual agreement, to kind of pivot it from them to you?
Certainly. So we went to the DDA and said, we're building this food hub. It's going to include a locally sourced grocery market known as a farm stop. We want to source our products from many of the same farmers you're carrying in the market. Now, what's different is the farm stop is going to be open every day, 7 to 7, 7 to 9 on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It's going to have a cafe. It's going to have local beer and wine, seasonal fresh produce, bread, dairy, all kinds of meat options, pantry staples. And we said, hey, we want to work with the same farmers that you're serving at the farmers market. Is there an opportunity for us to consider maybe a market relocation? Mm-hmm. We have more room. We have facilities inside. This is, of course, incredibly aligned with our mission to empower the community through fresh food access. And so is there any opportunity for the market to co-locate on our own patio? We won't, charge you anything like that, but maybe make it easier on the farmers. They can come to market. They can also stock their account with us. Mm-hmm. It drives traffic for us. What a great opportunity. And they came back and said, hey, we've been thrilled to get to run the market, but it's really mission aligned for you. It seems like it could be a great opportunity.
Right.
Would you consider, taking it over and kind of transitioning that leadership? And I said, only if we can hire Dodie too, because Dodie has done so much great work in the last 3 years to really revitalize and reinvigorate the market. And we said, we want to bring that energy, that commitment to local food, and that commitment to community.
Yeah.
Into the family at Grow Jackson. And so we've been really excited to run the winter market under Dodie's leadership, and thanks to, our friends at Found Church downtown. And then, we're really excited to bring it back. So May 2nd is kind of the grand reopening and ribbon cutting on the River and Rail patio. So it's the River and Rail Food Hub. We're excited to talk about the Grand River and the history of the rail in Jackson. And so the food hub's going to have a lot of concepts, but the farmer's market is that first major major concept coming back on May 2nd.
All right. Well, tell us about that. What can we expect on May 2nd, Dodie?
On May 2nd, we've got probably 60 rotating vendors. Most of them are the vendors you're going to see regularly. We've got Kevin Krieger. He's bringing his saxophone down. He'll provide the entertainment, like Jacob said, from 10 to 1. We'll have crafts for the kids. Dare I say maybe a few farm friends, animals? I'm not sure yet, but we'll see. And we got half a dozen food trucks coming down. So we'll have plenty to eat, plenty of fun things happening.
Okay. So that's going to be on May 2nd from starting at what, 10, you said?
It'd be 9 a.m.
9, okay. So 9 o'clock is when that starts, the festivities. And that's right there on the grounds of the prison, right?
Yep. Inside the historic state prison, there's this building, and the county came to us and said, we'd like to see a market here. And so for 2 years, we've been planning and reimagining the space. And now we've had, you know, community partners step up and say, we see this vision, we want to support this vision. So our friends at True Community Credit Union have sponsored the patio. Our friends at Experience Jackson have said, we're in to support, you know, the entertainment and the engagement. And then just last week, Elrose Steel announced that they're also going to come in and sponsor. So we're really excited to just begin to develop this multi-concept food hub. But that farmer's market for us is the most obvious and logical entry point. People know the farmer's market. They love the farmer's market. Mm-hmm. They can come down on a Saturday, bring the whole family. You can ride your bikes because it's right on the trail. With entertainment and lunch and, you know, food, we want people to come for a full afternoon experience and really engage. Yeah.
Well, all right. So Jacob and you both are familiar with Jackson. You've been around this town for a while, and you know that there's always been a little bit of resistance to change.
Sure. Of
have course. And I'm sure you've experienced that with this. So how have you addressed that?
Certainly. Well, we think that, you know, first, obviously, when that change happens, it's important to listen. So we've talked to our farmers and said, this is what we're thinking. We want to move it. How do you feel? Because first and foremost, it's for them. And after some great discussions, they're really excited about it. So we're thrilled about that. We also know that, you know, there's still this question of how are we going to engage with the market if it's not downtown. Market's staying downtown on Friday. We're not going away from downtown. We're keeping that Friday option. We're just really leaning into the Saturday market because there's so much more room. There's wraparound educational programming that Grow Jackson's always done. There's going to be community gardens at the food hub that we can use folks to engage. Okay. And the thing for us is there's more parking, there's more space for vendors, there's more alignment, we think. And this is absolutely nothing against the great work the DDA did and, you know, the opportunities that were for the market. But we think we can take it even further.
Okay. What I love about, I don't know if you've ever done those tours, the prison tours, but what I love about this is there used to be some pretty horrific things that happened there. And we're talking about now going into growth, revitalization, turning what used to be a place where some pretty bad stuff happened to now a very good, positive feel, positive things happening at that facility and on those grounds. I mean, it's a complete 180.
Absolutely. I actually had a board member last week say, we're going from a place where people used to suffer and be incarcerated to where we're liberating people. We're focused on food justice. We're focused on food access. We're focused on community building. And it is a complete 180. It is a total reimagination of what used to happen in this space. And it's more jobs. It's opportunities for farmers and food producers. It's community building. It's connection. It's really close to downtown. It's going to be a vibrant, beautiful space. And we're just thrilled to get to be a part of it. And partner with the county, partner with Experience Jackson and Alro and True, partner with the residents of the community who are living right there and say, come alongside, let's work together to take this revitalization forward.
Okay. What's going to happen with the, because the county's been using that for fair parking during fair week. Is that, are those plans still intact? I mean, how's that going to work?
Absolutely. The county will still do the fair parking. Our lease is only a small section of that broader parcel. And we have obviously a fantastic relationship with the county.
Yeah.
And we're still going to have parking. We actually just met about it last week. And so the Parks Department and I are, you know, corresponding regularly to make sure that our efforts, their efforts are coordinated, and it's more of a one plus one equals three situation.
So what does the summer look like for this? So the ribbon cutting's on the 2nd, and then from there, what are the projected benchmark dates? What are your goals? When's it going to open up completely? When are we going to have kind of this whole feel that you're talking about going to be in full effect.
Absolutely. So like you said, the market again on May 2nd, that will continue every weekend.
Okay.
Friday downtown, Saturday at the River and Rail Food Hub, every weekend throughout the summer. Our goal is to start construction on the grocery component, that farm stop, in a couple of weeks. We've got to get final approval from the health department and a few other entities. But the hope is to start construction by May and then to have construction finalized by the end of June. And at that point, the opening date should be sometime in mid-July. Really just depends on, you know, how soon can we get all of our licenses? How soon can we get our final approvals? But we've already started to interview a couple folks on staff for opportunities. We're going to be posting positions here pretty soon. Okay. You know, we have the dollars. We're ready to go. We're really excited to move forward. We're, of course, always looking for more support to help with those final opening processes. But the goal is to be open in mid-July and welcome fair parking that second week of August and, you know, be fully operational. But it's going to be a year-round, seven-day-a-week grocery market that's going to carry seasonal produce. So we're going to work with local supply chains all over the state. We're going to work with farmers right here in our own community. Mm-hmm. And folks can look forward to consistent, robust, fresh food access coming from right down the road. When you shop there, Mark, you're going to be every dollar you spend in the grocery store normally, about 15 cents makes it back to the farmer. When you shop at the farm stop, 70 cents is going back to the farmer of every dollar. So that is a meaningful and significant investment in our small businesses, in our farm families, and in our local food economy, while also creating year-round fresh food access in a neighborhood where there's not a reliable grocery store.
One of the challenges you're going to have to overcome, though, is this is going to be covered by a big prison wall.
Absolutely.
I mean, people aren't going to be seeing it as they drive on by. How are you going to overcome that challenge?
Absolutely. People have said that to us from the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And initially, I worried a lot about it. Now I actually believe it's an asset because we are working hard to make it a destination. So this isn't a grocery store. Like you run into Meijer, you grab a few things and you're gone. Nothing against Meijer, but no one's going to Meijer to hang out. Except maybe some high schoolers. So we're saying we want people to come in and stay. We want you to come in, have a coffee from the cafe, you know, have a beer on the patio with your family, enjoy one of the food trucks. Yes, come get your groceries, but come celebrate food. Mm-hmm. Come connect with your community. Come meet a farmer and really change the way we experience our local food economy in Jackson.
Dodie, what do you think of this vision here? What do you think of what this is eventually going to be later this summer?
Well, I have to speak to the transition, first of all, when we talk about how to integrate change from the DDA to the farm stop.
Yeah.
Early last year, it was very clear that it was important to Jacob and Grow Jackson to build trust with our farmers and with the farmers market to start with. His goal, from what I understood in the beginning, was simply to get the input from the farmers and from the attendees that came to the market. So they've been working very hard from the beginning to make sure that the integration of the farm market into the farm stop, into the entire plan, was fair to everybody and easy for everybody.
Okay. Because you've been with the farmers market for...
This will be the fourth summer.
Fourth summer. So we've been talking about this for a while. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking to those who come out to the market all last summer, and we kind of knew these plans were happening, they were developing, they've changed a little bit since last summer, but the idea has been to have this at that location.
Yeah. And
what were the thoughts of those who are attending about this, you know, moving from where it is to where it's going to be?
Well, when we first talked about it, when Jacob and I talked about it, we both agreed that it was going to be important to start talking about it very early to get that input. The farmers market has been well attended. We always say that the key to its success is good vendors and good spenders, and we have both of those. And that's who we talked to about it. Uh-huh. We kept up that conversation. We continue to get input. Jacob is constantly at the market, constantly talking to vendors, constantly talking to attendees. So the vibe around the whole transition has been great. Okay. The more we talk about it, the more good feedback we get. There really hasn't been any negativity at all surrounding it, especially with preserving access downtown for that Friday crowd and then beginning to build that community space out there at the farm stop.
What about the Tuesday day?
We attempted that. Construction gave us a little bit of a hard time there. Okay. So, yeah, we had to cut that kind of short halfway. But there is such a great demand for an evening market. We heard that a lot. And the farm stop's going to satisfy that for a lot of people. A lot of the problem, the feedback that we got was we were only open 2 days a week for a few hours.
Yeah.
So this farm stop actually speaks to that concern. The biggest concern the people had was access.
Right. Well, and I like how you talked about it being a destination. Yeah. I'd like to maybe throw in their experience also, because I mean that's what it is.
Certainly, we want people to experience their food in a new way. I want you to be there to buy your gallon of milk and your eggs and your bread and the produce you need for dinner, and to see a farmer coming in from Homer dropping off the eggs you just bought. And hey, I get to shake your hand. I get to say, thanks for buying my food. Thanks for growing my food. And that connection now becomes really authentic. That is so much more than a transaction, right? Our food system is very transactional because it has made sense for it to be transactional so it could scale. We want people to reconnect to the feeling of being in your grandparents' garden, farm fresh eggs, fresh meat on Saturday morning with breakfast. And those are experiences and emotional connections to food, to community health, to health access, to food security that we think is a totally different way of thinking about food.
Right. Well, it's when you grocery shop, a lot of times it's, hey, pick this up on the way home, and it's always go, go, go. That's how our lifestyles are.
Absolutely.
This, I like how it's, it's going to be a destination. I'm not going to have to hurry up to grab that gallon of milk. I can show up. I can find some unique products that I'm not going to find on the shelves at other places. I can see some familiar faces. I can enjoy a beverage. I can slow down and just kind of take in the experience.
It's a bit of a slow food movement.
Yeah.
Like there's a concept that has started to pop up around the country that we're really leaning into called people being localvores.
Right.
Right. And it doesn't mean that the traditional grocery stores have a problem. It doesn't mean that we're going to replace, what people are buying. People are still going to need their citrus and their bananas and their avocado and everything else from all over, the world. Right. But we're really excited to say, hey, if you're going to buy lettuce, consider buying lettuce from the family in Stockbridge, not the farm in Argentina. Consider buying your eggs from the people out in Brooklyn, not some factory farm, thousands of miles away. We want people to slow down. We want them to think about the process that went into growing and making this food.
Yeah.
Think about how it nourishes their body, nourishes their family, nourishes their community.
Who are your partners going to be with the Beer Garden?
Absolutely. So Experience Jackson has sponsored the Beer Garden, and we're incredibly grateful to them for that. They've really come alongside and said, we see this as a destination. We see this as an experience, and we want to help augment that. And so they're actually also supporting some bike development in terms of bike trails and things like that going right there.
Of course they are.
We're really excited about that. And it's been a fantastic fit and a fantastic partnership. But Experience Jackson, again, true community sponsors the patio. Elro Steel just announced last week that they're going to sponsor our community learning space.
Okay.
Because for us, it's about more than just, like you said, running in, grabbing something and going. We want people to say, hey, I've never seen this kind of plant before. What is it? Well, let me tell you about it, and here's how you use it, and here's a recipe to go with it.
Gotcha.
So in addition to being available for people to shop on a consistent basis, we're going to have Meet the Farmer events. We're going to have education classes. We're going to have nutrition nights. We're going to have reasons for people to come visit, to come learn, to come connect with each other, and to connect with their food in a new way.
Now, what's the Grow Jackson overlap here? Because I know that's your baby.
Absolutely.
That's your baby.
So this is all still Grow Jackson.
Okay.
Grow Jackson is still the parent company. It's still the entity that's operating everything. We just wanted to come up with a name, the River and Rail Food Hub, that felt really connected to place.
Okay.
And so we thought about it for over a year. How do we really highlight these amazing assets in Jackson and build on them and really connect to the community that we're coming into?
Okay. Is this going to be the main hub then for Grow Jackson? Are you still going to have the community-wide gardens, raised gardens and whatnot? Or how's this going to look?
So this is actually going to strengthen everything we've been doing with Grow Jackson. We will continue to do the gardens. We will continue to work in classrooms. We work with over 1,500 students last year.
Yeah.
Our workforce program is still going to run every summer with those high school age students. And our community nutrition program is going to keep happening.
Okay.
We actually think that by implementing a food hub, there's now going to be a brick and mortar where staff can come together every day.
Okay.
We have more reliable space to do our education, more reliable space for tool storage, logistics, garden planning. I mean, for the last 5 years, it's been very grassroots. And myself and my staff, we're excited to
get... Pun intended.
Pun intended.
By the way.
Sorry for that low-hanging fruit. But we, my staff and I, right, we have our stuff in the basement, in the garage, in the minivan, in the back of the truck. We're excited to bring all the pieces together and not text someone, hey, do you have that shovel or do you have that whiteboard? But have some logistics that make sense. So this, for us, represents growth of the whole organization.
Is that structure that's on the prison property, is that big enough to do everything that you want to do? Because it doesn't... I'm trying to think. It doesn't feel like it's as big as what you're explaining here, what you want to do.
Absolutely. So it's actually about 7,000 square feet.
Okay.
And so the farm stop market is only going to be about a 1,500 square foot footprint in the store. Really small, easy for people, easy for a couple staff members to operate. That really promotes our organizational efficiency and financial sustainability, which is really important to us because we know this model is unique. We know it's going to require a lot of work to bring a new customer base and a new demographic into these kinds of concepts. So the farm stop will represent about a third of the space. And then with the other half of the building, we want to do, you know, even more. So we're working on plans to put in what will feel like a food court, but for food entrepreneurs. And so there will be four kitchens for incubation of restaurants for people to start and scale their restaurant. Right. We're going to put in a nutrition and culinary training kitchen. And then outside, we want to add a mill. We want to add a greenhouse. We want to add a processing kitchen. This is going to be parking for our mobile market. So we know that it's going to be crowded, but we also are being very intentional and very thoughtful and bringing all these different concepts together that basically ask the question, how can we promote local food? How can we build community? And how can we create financial opportunity for our local food system? And then, you know, the cascading effect of that is that it creates financial opportunity for Grow Jackson, which in turn we reinvest into more community gardens, more school gardens, more workforce opportunities, and it becomes this positive feedback loop.
Ribbon cutting, Saturday, May 2nd. Let's give our listeners just kind of the elevator speech. Let's kind of wrap up where we started. What do they need to know about that event?
Runs from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. We'll have over 60 vendors. We'll have food. We'll have kids events. We'll have music. A great opportunity for you to come down, meet your farmers, find out where your food comes from, see what you can expect for the rest of the summer. And
Should they come in off of Mechanic or should they go in off of North?
Either way.
Okay.
The address, the 137 West North Street address, will get them there. Comes in that north gate. It'll be open. But folks can come off Mechanic. They need to park in the parking lot by the farm stop, in the grass, in the gravel, not in the apartment parking lots. But there are plenty of parking, as the people know. Plenty of parking as people know go to the fair. Right. So, yeah, May 2nd, 9 to 2, ribbon cuttings at 11. Vendors, food trucks, plenty of opportunities for the family.
Drive slow on those bricks.
Absolutely.
Drive slow on those bricks. Jacob, Jody, or Doty, thank you so much for being here today. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
You're listening to AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM 101.5.
You're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast with your host, Mark Daly.
Back to AM Jackson on WKHM, Jackson's News Talk 970 AM and 101.5 FM.
6:36, 24 minutes now, in front of 9 o'clock, or I'm sorry, in front of 10 o'clock. Yeah, don't want to wish the day away too fast. John Waldron joining us in the studio. It's time for another conversation with Southern Michigan Bank and Trust. Hey, John, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Mark.
You appear to have stayed dry. That's what it looks like anyway.
I've been in and out of my car a number of times today. And
we have good drying stations here at the station, I guess.
I have a big umbrella.
Okay.
I made it in early and grabbed some coffee from the Vermeulen's coffee station over there.
Vermeulen's Green Room, okay. All right, well, good. Well, hey, we're glad that you're able to make it in and talk a little bit about what's going on with Southern Michigan Bank and Trust, and continues to grow, it sounds like.
Bank's doing well. Mm-hmm. Thank you for asking. Jackson's been a great move for us, and big number in banking for us is, you know, how many loans are you making? How are you supporting the community, and how many deposits are you bringing in? And the loan volume has been really good. We've been really well received. Great lending team. You have Bill Jores. He was the first commercial lender that came when I came over here. And then you have Mike Jores and Matt Miller. We talked a little bit about Mike when I showed up here a little bit ago, and him being out at Western High School. Maybe we can talk about that a little. You were there.
Yeah.
But then Mike Yorish, Matt Miller, Bobby Rozek. So that's the commercial team.
Yeah.
And then Chad Perrine is head of our wealth department. We hired Chad a couple years ago to be a Jackson trust officer, wealth management officer for us. And then the head of our wealth department at the corporate level had a great opportunity that he took and moved on, and we promoted Chad. So Chad's head of the wealth department for the entire company.
Yeah,
he's been great. You have Craig Talbert on the mortgage side, a couple branch managers. We have Andrew DeHaven downtown, Sarah Walls. Sarah was our first manager we hired here in town, and she's done a great job down there at Weatherwax. And we're doing well. Year end was good. We had a nice year in 25.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, loan volume, like I say, has been really good. And then a nice mark that we hit was $100 million in deposits in Jackson.
Okay.
So the goal was to get there, and we've made it in a relatively short period of time. So,
all right. So when you set a goal like that, do you say, hey, we want to have that number by such and such date? Mm-hmm. Or are you like, well, we just want to hit that number? How's that? For lack of knowledge in the banking industry, how do you set those goals?
We look at the market. We look at the locations we have. So we had downtown, then we built Weatherwax. So now you have a couple nice locations, good visibility. And then you have the loan office downtown, and at that point we said, okay, let's get to $100 million in deposits by year end 25.
Mm-hmm.
So we're coming up on 4 years for us being here, really a couple years though of brick and mortar,
right?
And the goal was by year end. We missed it a little, but we hit it in the first quarter. So
you make the goal. At least what I do, and I can't speak to you, but you make an aggressive goal.
Mm-hmm.
And even if, you hit it, but if it's, within that window, there's still a good sense of achievement knowing that you made that. So, all right. Okay. One of the things I want to highlight here, when you're listing through all of those who are with Southern Michigan Bank of Trust, each and every one is a recognizable name. Each and every one is people that we know in the Jackson community. And that's got to be by design. That had to be done with intent and purpose, because it's all about building relationships. And those are individuals who already had relationships built in Jackson.
Yeah, it's a great team of people that know how to bank.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's community bank or big bank, it's relationships, as you said. So the team is really well experienced and knows how to bank. And they all, I say it all the time, they live here.
Yeah,
they live here, they work here, and they take pride in Jackson. You're seeing things on the internet a little bit about, that's Jackson or Jackson this and Jackson that, but Jackson's a great place.
Yeah,
from affordability to things to do,
right?
And it's big enough where everybody doesn't know your business, but it's small enough that everybody does know someone that knows someone, and it, at the end of the day, it's a really great, affordable place to live, and with a lot of amenities. It's a nice place.
Did the Westwood Mall Hippo make a stop to Southern Michigan Bank and Trust?
Whoever's in charge of that, oh my goodness, somebody ought to hire them. It's everywhere. It's not been at our place.
It certainly has died down, but it stopped by darn near every place in Jackson.
Who's doing that? Any idea?
They had him on K105.3 for the people who started the Facebook threads. So, all right. Well, let's talk about community involvement a little bit. Cause, you and I talked about Art Beer and Wine before we went on the air. Of course, I saw Mike yesterday at the career fair at Western School. Unbelievable.
Tell me about
that. All right. Let me tell you this.
The angle was high school kids?
Yeah.
High school kids looking for employment. Okay.
Not necessarily looking for employment. There was a certain amount of that. But, you're talking about 15, 16, 17-year-olds. So they're just looking to ask questions to professionals about their career. It's a career fair. They want to learn about a career.
Okay.
We had a couple applications. Some of the older kids who could drive that we had fill out, because we're always looking for producer positions here.
Sure.
Right? So there's a little bit of
that, but I mean they're engaging with professionals who are working in and around Jackson in a variety of fields, and it's just a great opportunity for kids to learn. It's a great opportunity for businesses to kind of promote themselves. But yeah, Southern Michigan Bank and Trust was there. I didn't get a chance to ask Mike about his golf game because, you know, the pulled pork was being served. But yeah, I mean it was just great to see him there. Great to see a lot of other of community members there. But yeah, it was fun. And it's just one of those things that Southern Michigan Bank and Trust does. You know, Ellis Sharp, the Art Beer and Wine Festival, you're part of that. You're part of a lot of things in the community.
We encourage, mm-hmm. We encourage, we nudge, we arm twist, but most of the time people do it with a smile to get out and into the events. Art Beer Wine.
Oh, that's such a hard gig to cover, isn't it? I mean, that is so tough to go out there and be a part of that. I dread that day.
I remember way, way, way back when one of the early ones when Bill did the toast.
Oh, yeah?
I think Bill's listening. He did the orange juice toast in the morning, and that's been a great event. So
okay.
Nice for Jackson for that, and then what else is coming? The Gus Macker's coming. And
oh, that's right.
And all of the golf benefits and pink ball is this weekend. There's just so much around here to do. Which
the pink
is
ball. That's right. That's this weekend ball. Too. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. There's so many things. There's so much going on. It's just things that kind of sneak up on you too. Right.
You can find something every day.
Right. Right. How do you decide what's important to support?
You try to do something for every ask. It's just not possible.
Right. But I know. Yeah.
The requests come in and we have an unofficial group that looks at all the requests and we say, okay, what can we do? Can we support this to whatever extent?
Yeah.
And you try. It's not rocket science. We just try to help as many as we can.
Okay. Let me circle back to the career fair because the experience I had at the career fair yesterday at Western, I spoke with Max. Max is what we used to call a lunch lady. I think there's a fancier, more politically correct term for that now.
Okay.
But Max came over to our table before the students arrived. And, you know, we're complimenting the food that was being served. And I was like, Max, do schools still serve those large chocolate chip cookies that are undercooked and gooey? She didn't answer me. She did. She said, wait 1 second.
Oh, boy.
She went back to the kitchen, came back, and brought two of those cookies for us.
There you go.
So good. So good. You don't find those cookies. And I know I diverted a little bit from what we're talking about, but I thought you'd get a kick out of it. I don't think Mike enjoyed a cookie.
No.
But they were so good.
I don't remember that out on Moscow Road at Hanover Horton High School.
They didn't
Remember the cardboard pizza?
Oh,
remember Pizza Day?
The grease dripping off the top of it. Yes, I remember those.
Yeah.
Right. You didn't have a large undercooked cookie?
I don't remember that.
Okay. Well, you missed out.
It's going to
be a triggering event for you.
I was a bit chunky when I was younger. I bet if they had them, I'm sure I ate them, Mark.
All right. If people aren't happy with their current banking situation, whether they're looking for a loan or if they're just looking for a place to open up a savings, checking account, any of that stuff. I have to imagine it's just as simple as walking into one of your locations.
It is extremely simple. Mm-hmm. We're fortunate here. We've said this before, too, when we've been on. I mean, it's not a bank on every corner anymore, but between banks and credit unions, you have a lot of options in our town. Right. You have headquartered. We have two. Well, we have multiple credit unions headquartered here. You have multiple banks that are here. And you have options. So if you feel you need to look around, certainly stop in the Weatherwax, stop in the downtown. And at the end of the day, you need somebody that's going to take care of your finances and that you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
And we have them. We have a wealth of experience at Southern Michigan Bank and Trust, and we're happy to be in Jackson.
Home loans. I mean, now we're in that time of year where spring just kind of that market just kind of really picks up. So home loans, you handle home loans too.
You need to be pre-approved in this market, and
you do.
Craig Talbert's right down the street there at Weatherwax.
Mm-hmm. Again, simple as walking in, or maybe should you phone first, or
you can walk in.
Yeah.
If he's not there, the folks there will get him a message, and he'll call you back. But again, another guy, yeah. another person that works for us with a lot of experience.
All right. Commercial loans. Yeah. Jackson likes their Jackson people. And with Southern Michigan Bank and Trust being in Jackson for 4 years now, how have you been able to navigate that? How has Southern Michigan Bank and Trust been able to kind of overcome that part? Because you know it's a thing that we deal with here in Jackson. Jackson likes Jackson people. So how has Southern Michigan Bank and Trust overcome that in the last 4 years?
People want accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
They can find us, and they want an answer. Can you do this? I mean, you're in the business, right? You want to know if you have a client, can it get done or can it not get done?
Right.
People are fine with no. Hey, I can't do that for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. But they'd like an answer
right.
quickly.
Yeah.
So we can generally vet a deal.
Time kills deals.
Quickly and then lay out the expectations. Hey, I can close in 30 days, 60 days. But yeah, this looks like a deal we can do. They just want an answer. They want to meet face to face. They want phone. You know, some people want Teams. They want a combination. It's just trying to get an answer to people and structure a deal for the best for them.
Right. Managing those expectations is huge.
People absolutely.
Especially when they're dealing with stuff in the commercial loan side of things. They don't like a whole lot. Surprises are going to happen.
Yeah.
But at least if you can, you know, squall that a little bit with expectations, that's right. huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
What else is going on? Anything else going on with Southern Michigan Bank and Trust that we should be talking about today? As we have John Waldron joining us here in the studio.
You know, we're looking for a great neighbor down there in Weatherwax. There we have a lot on either side of us.
Okay.
And the infrastructure is in. The plat map or whatever McFallahee there, American Title, calls it. It's laid out. It's condoed out. So there are condo rules.
Okay.
Infrastructure is in, and we'll be formally listing them, I think, relatively soon.
Okay.
So we're looking for a good neighbor. If anybody wants to join us there in Weatherwax. And, boy, what else?
Wait, is this crazy? Because I'm working and living in Jackson for 20 years, and that wooded corner... you know, as long as it's been there, you know, and you've been in Jackson longer than I have, but just seeing that wooded corner just turn into something that is, you know, that beautiful structure it is now.
I'm going way back, Mark. I grew up on Springbrook, and I'd ride my bike up to Bob's Country Store when it was legitimately Bob's Country Store, and Polly's wasn't there. You had Brandywine, and you had Bob's Country Store, and that was about it. But then, that was... You know, Weatherwax wasn't even there when I grew up.
Okay.
So.
Wow.
Anyway, progress, right?
Yeah.
Jackson guy, my team's Jackson people. We like Jackson, and it's a great place to do business.
For sure.
Again, I said earlier, I heard the Art Beer Wine people this morning. Yep. Every morning I get great news on WKHM.
Oh, thank you for listening. I get the occasional text.
Sometimes I'm not driving and texting, but I'm.
It's talking text, right?
Right.
Yeah, I appreciate the input, man. Thank you so much. All right.
And you've been in your seat for how long now?
It was November a year ago. So, yeah, we're talking about a year, approaching a year and a half. Yeah.
God, time flies. You're doing a great job, man.
Enjoying the heck out of it.
I bet Greg's listening. If Greg's listening, hey, Greg, how's it going?
he listens. Yeah. I get notes every once in a while too. So.
Does he send you tips? Hey, you could do this a little different.
No, it'd be. I get a lot of scores from him during the football and basketball seasons, and I'll get a hey, so and so would they'd like an interview. But when I read a text from Greg, it always comes through in Greg's voice. Hey, call John LaFleur. He's got drifting coming back. So that's.
That's great.
Well, all right, anyway. Hey, thanks for coming in today. Thanks for the opportunity to talk. Always enjoy our chats.
Yep.
And we'll talk again. I think we got you coming in a month or so.
See. Thanks all for having me on.
Good deal. You're listening to AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM at 950.
This has been the AM Jackson Podcast. Tune in live weekday mornings from 6 until 10 at News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM, and online at WKHM.com.